Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Can you believe this?
Oh, Zion! Say it with your chest.
Looking to push tempo here, the Pelicans.
He'll get there. Bunny hops into a bucket.
Hold that follow through.
He posed.
That's right.
This is what takes you to another level.
What the Pel is up, everyone? This is Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans with your host, Elliot Clough, at Elliot Clough on Twitter. That's ELIOTCLOUGH. And before we get started, make sure that if you are already subscribing on Apple Podcasts, you leave a rate and review. That really, really helps us out. And if you're not subscribed, go ahead and do that and follow wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast right here. And I know, I've said it before, I know some of y'all are listening on Apple Podcasts and not leaving a rate and review, and I'm telling you, we would really appreciate it. So it would be great if you did that. Today's podcast, Ethan Piotta of Prospect Pod and Overtime Heroics, joining us once again for the first time since March. He helped us evaluate where the Pels could go in the draft at that point in time, and obviously plenty of things have changed in the last 5 months, 6 months, whatever, I don't know. And Ethan came back today to be our second ever returning guest. He crushed it. Ethan's great at what he does. Again, I've said it before, he's kind of young in the game. He's been doing this for 3 years now, draft evaluation, and the guy just crushes it. He knows what he's talking about. He's, believe it or not, played against some of these guys that we're evaluating. So that's pretty dope. Talked about that a little bit in the podcast. And today we talked about the needs that the Pelicans could address in this year's NBA draft, starting point guard, center, and, of course, that 3-and-D position. So here is my conversation with Ethan Piotta of Prospect Pod and Overtime Heroics. And we are joined by Ethan Piotta of Prospect Pod and Overtime Heroics, our second ever repeat guest also. Very excited to have Ethan be joining us for the first time since March. Done so much for Prospect Pod and really gained some traction on the pod over there. Ethan, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. As you said, I'm honored to be the second ever repeat guest. So thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you're killing the game, man. I've seen how much your pod is gaining traction. And how are things going over there?
Great. So yeah, I record pretty much weekly, I would say, episodes of the Prospect Podcast. That's what we call ourselves, just myself and one other guy. And we've had, I think, great success through our first 10 episodes or so, just talking about NBA drafts. So if you're looking for something really NBA draft specific, I think that's the place to go, or at least check us out. But it's definitely been a fun experience, because that's pretty much my first ever podcast I've kind of tried to run and go through. So.
Sure. And I said it on our pod earlier this week that I find it way more difficult to evaluate future NBA prospects as opposed to NFL prospects. It's just a completely different game. And Ethan does a really good job of it. He's watching film like hell. So if there's a pod to check out, and you'll hear from him today again, but we're very excited to have Ethan on. He's been doing a great job. He's a young guy, but doing great stuff. So we talked a lot about the Pels' needs this offseason on the podcast, and whether the Pels should go into free agency or the draft. And there's three clear needs that we've talked about. We talked about a little bit the last time Ethan was on, and that was the need for a 3-and-D wing, a backup point guard, and a center, or a big four who can spread the floor and protect the rim and get boards. Now, Ethan, you said you're pretty familiar with the Pelicans roster. You looked at what the needs are. Are there any other needs that stick out to you other than those three that I just listed?
In terms of needs, no, you pretty much hit it spot on. Maybe adding another explosive guard, scoring punch kind of guy off the bench would also be nice. The Pelicans, I think I said this exact same thing last time, are just in such an extraordinary situation. Obviously, the season didn't end, I'm sure, how many fans wanted it to end with the amount of success in the bubble that they had. But they're in a situation where they're building with a young core. Obviously, there are some I would say newly formed question marks. I don't know what your guys' feelings are on Lonzo Ball and a few other guys that you know could have potentially changed trajectories over these last few months. But obviously having a guy like Zion Williamson and the other pieces, Jackson Hayes, I think is an emerging piece for this team. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I still think has tremendous upside for where he was drafted last year. He was a great pick at where he was valued. But I think you pretty much hit it spot on with the, in terms of, you know, they can almost go best player available, but for needs, a 3-and-D wing, you can never have enough of them in the NBA, no matter what team you're looking at, especially for a team like a Pelicans that, you know, the Pelicans that's growing as a young core, has a nice little mix mash of veterans and young guys. Adding a 3-and-D wing in this draft should be priority number one.
Definitely. And like Antonio Daniel said when he was on the podcast, you can never have too much shooting on an NBA roster. So 3-and-D will definitely help out. And in terms of defense, the Pels could definitely use some help there as well. Who knows where Derek Favors is going to go this offseason. Drew, an incredible individual defender. Zoe can hold his own. But other than that, you're not getting a whole lot of defense from the Pelicans roster. But as we look forward to the 2020 NBA draft coming up here in October, there were a few names that we talked about again on this last time we had you on in March. And the three that I listed more recently on the podcast earlier this week in terms of acquiring a 3-and-D guy from this year's draft was Isaac Okoro, Patrick Williams from FSU, and then Sadiq Bey. He's rising up draft boards and is one of the most frequently talked about possible Pelicans picks going into this draft. Are those three names that stick out to you, or is there any other guys? Do you think they'll fall to 13?
Right. I mean, I would say the ultimate dream scenario for Pelicans fans out there is if somehow Devin Vassell fell to 13. From everything I've heard, from everything I've read and been told, that's most likely not going to happen. He's pretty much solidified himself as a top 10 pick with his talent level, what he did at FSU. Because he's, I think, for the most surefire, positive, impactful 3-and-D guy in this class. When you're just talking about, you know, high floor, potential high ceiling, he's going to be an impactful guy. My thought is that he isn't going to fall to 13. So you're completely right about it. I would say Patrick Williams for sure. Also, not only fits the need of kind of a 3-and-D two-way guy, but can play some, you know, space-creating four and maybe even back up five at times with his athleticism and his shot-blocking ability. I think he's truly one of the most versatile guys in this class. As for Isaac Okoro, also a great name, someone that probably will go before 13, but again, should be an automatic, kind of like Vassell. If he's there at 13, you pull the trigger. That's a guy that is, you know, a developed shot away from being one of the best players in this class, honestly. And it all just depends on how, you know, high you value that shot and his potential fix of it. But I'm not as high on Sadiq Bey as others. I know he's been someone that's definitely risen around NBA rooms, risen up draft boards and stuff like that. My thought with him is that I think, you know, although he shot 45%, he'll bring some shooting to the NBA. That number is probably going to dip a little bit. But defensively, his MO is kind of being a perimeter lockdown guy. I think that his movement worries me a lot more than others. I think Villanova's tremendous defensive scheme under Jay Wright masked some of his defensive deficiencies last year. I'm not completely comfortable with picking him in the lottery.
I feel the same way about Bey. I mean, I haven't done near the evaluation that you have, obviously, but Bey seems to be a guy, for whatever reason, is clearly ascending up draft boards, but he doesn't seem like a guy who has a high ceiling. And in the lottery, you always go for high ceiling. Would you agree with that?
100%. I mean, I think there's a slight, you know, change in philosophy, and obviously everyone can have their own draft philosophy, but you're right. The lottery is for upside. I think for the Pelicans, there is that slight change because they do have pieces already, young pieces like Zion Williamson, like potentially Brandon Ingram if he's coming back, and others. And so it's maybe a little bit of a shift into, okay, we're one or two role pieces away from now adding, you know, these high floor guys that could take us to, you know, can play playoff minutes ultimately. And I'm not there with Sadiq Bey, unfortunately. I think you're completely right about his lack of upside as well. I just think defensively, a lot of teams are going to be drafting him for that 3-and-D package. I'm really worried about putting him out there as a primary point of attack defender. I just don't buy his movement whatsoever. And so that's why I'm definitely more out on him than some of the other 3-and-D guys that you mentioned.
I'm talking about Devin Vassell. I've looked into him a little bit too. I've seen him be in the top 10 of a lot of mocks. My concern with him, obviously, he has some room to grow. He's a young guy. He can get into the weight room at the professional level, but that 6'5", 180 pounds is not necessarily what the Pels are looking for. So what I'm thinking is more of the Patrick Williams type, the 6'8 guy who's a little bit longer. The Pels really struggled with LeBron James, the Giannis types, the wings that are capable of handling the ball, shooting and attacking the basket. Obviously, you're not going to stop the Giannises. You're not going to stop the LeBrons, especially with a rookie. But that's my concern with Devin Vassell. As far as his size currently, he appears to be more of a guy who's going to guard a 1, 2, and 3 in certain occasions. Is that something that you see as well?
I'm not as worried about his frame. I think, you know, this is a guy, he's all-time level instincts defensively. One of the probably best team defenders I've ever evaluated since I've done this. I've only done this for 3 years, but, you know, speaking of that, it does show high praise. I mean, he's an absolute game record defensively. I actually just recently went over one of his games against Duke. Cassius Stanley drove the ball to the left side of the floor, I think, one time in the first half. Trey Jones did it twice. That's where Vassell mainly was throughout the game, guarding Matthew Hurt. And every single time it was a disruption. It was either a drive stop or a tip pass or deflection or something. He gets his hands on everything. He's absolutely everywhere defensively. But I do agree with you in the fact that I have Patrick Williams, his teammate at FSU, ranked a bit higher than him. I think I have Williams at 8, Vassell at 9. And that's because I think Williams' upside is just tremendous. You're looking at a guy that, I mean, although he didn't produce, you know, extraordinary numbers at FSU, 6'8", versatile beast defensively, someone that was running the pick and roll as the ball handler. You just don't see that very often from 6'8 guys. I think he's going to be a future potential 40% or so three-point shooter with tremendous defensive versatility and kind of does fit into the mold of what the Pelicans need in terms of not only getting a two-way high upside play with a great base to build upon, but also kind of a guy that you can throw in as a small ball five. You can deploy in a bunch of different lineups as that kind of face-up, stretch the floor or four. You know, you need as many guys as those as possible. You mentioned it. Can never have enough shooting, especially on a team with the Pelicans that relies on spacing, that relies on, you know, creating space for their stars, for their guys that are going to have the ball the majority of the time. I think either two of those are really good plays.
Yeah, you articulated that really well, a lot better than a guy who does much less research on the NBA draft. And, I mean, yeah, you hit it on the head. All the reasons that I like Patrick Williams coming from that 13th spot out of FSU. He's just the classic FSU guy who's tall and incredibly lanky and can do a lot. Do you see his ceiling being more than a 3-and-D wing in this league? Do you think he can be that third star with a Zion Williamson, with a Brandon Ingram, should the Pels grab him and he develop the way you believe he can?
Absolutely. I think, you know, in kind of the third star in that role for the Pelicans, might not be on any team in the NBA, but definitely for the Pelicans, if he is to grow with his upside, I firmly believe he can end up being one of the best players in this draft class. I only have really his upside knocked behind Pokuševski and LaMelo Ball at 1-2 in terms of just overall upside. And obviously you can do with that what you wish. But for Williams, I mean, he's a guy that I think is going to develop some self-creation ability, some self-creation equity offensively over the course of his career. I think his shot it's got great indicators in terms of just his touch around the rim, was a really solid free throw shooter at FSU, you know, showed willingness to shoot off the catch, off the dribble. Makes me really confident in the, you know, the potential trajectory of where his shot could go. And, you know, this is just the offense we're talking about. Again, this is a guy that was guarding ones primarily. I love how Leonard Hamilton at FSU, Leonard Hamilton, great coach, by the way. I love how he was able to just kind of throw him out, this 18-year-old kid in the fire, have him guard Cole Anthony, Trey Jones, Elijah Hughes, a number of other guys in the ACC on the perimeter. And he held his own for most of the – yes, there are questions about his movement. I've seen some people say that his quads, his thighs are a little bit too big for his body, which is insane. but I think with any NBA strength and conditioning program, they can kind of mold these guys' bodies into what they need to be. And so that's the hope with Patrick Williams, because he's got great instincts defensively, great rim protection ability. again, a guy that's always in the passing lanes, really, I think, a plus team defender. And, you know, you could be looking at him as a guy that is guarding the premier big wings in the NBA in the future, which is invaluable to any NBA team.
We've been talking about this as a need for such a long time, basically since March on the podcast. And we've really looked to free agency to using the mid-level exception, assuming that the Pels don't tear down the roster to the degree that is a possibility this offseason. So should the Pels hold onto the 13th pick, or maybe what we're hearing is trade Lonzo and get that 8th pick, I love the grab of Patrick Williams. I love what you're saying right now. He appears to be the guy that I think would fit the best role in this year's NBA draft, where the Pelicans are sitting. And we'll talk about what you believe to be the best option for them a little bit later on in today's podcast. But the second thing that we talked about at the top of the show was the need for a backup point guard and maybe a starting point guard. Who knows what the future of Lonzo is going to look like in New Orleans. But at 13, personally, I don't see the backup point guard need being filled by what's available in this draft. What I expect to see, the Pels are at 39, 42, and 60 in the second round. Maybe they package those and move up in the second round. Maybe offer up another second round pick or a first round pick in the future to move up and get a different backup point guard. But I mean, I just don't see anybody at 13. I mean, there's Killian Hayes, who a lot of people love out of France, who's pretty much guaranteed to go in the top 10 in a lot of mocks. And he's not necessarily what the Pels are looking for. What are you seeing at 13 for the Pels if they decide to go for the backup point guard at that 13th spot?
Right. This point guard, I mean, this has always been, I think even since March, I might have mentioned it on the show, this is a deep point guard draft class. I think there are going to be some options there at 13 for the Pelicans. My favorite personally would be Kyra Lewis Jr. out of Alabama. I think he is an ideal fit for what the Pelicans are building with. If they do choose to go backup point guard, again, he's probably the fastest player in this draft, the most explosive player in this draft off the bounce, tremendous vision out of the pick and roll. His game's going to translate, I think, in a seamless way to the NBA just with his speed. The biggest thing I recently noticed when you know, I went from watching all this college basketball during quarantine, all this tape, all this film, I flipped on the NBA. It's always the speed. It's always the spacing that is the most glaring difference in terms of play style. And that's why I think that a guy like Kyra Lewis benefits from that tremendously. I think his floor you're looking at is as a career kind of his six man spot. And that's, I mean, that's a lot more than you can say for a lot of these guys in this class. I have him ranked at 7 in my big board right now. Another guy I just want to throw out there, Tyrese Maxey. A lot of people are kind of, middling on him. Again, 6'2", I would say, guard from Kentucky. Don't know whether he's going to be a shooting guard or a point guard because he's a little bit undersized, but he also doesn't have tremendous ball handling ability. But a guy who could fit into that secondary role, that secondary score with, again, he's going to bring one of the most underrated skills in this draft, and that's his perimeter defense to the Pelicans if he were to be drafted there. And that's honestly, you know, adding him to a duo of potentially Lonzo and Drew Holiday on the perimeter is enticing to me. So I would say either two of those guys, if they were to fall at 13, would absolutely not be bad options.
So looking at Kyra Lewis Jr.'s stats out of Alabama this year, the last 2 years, I should say, the concern for Pelicans fans, a lot of the concern for Pelicans fans when it comes to Lonzo is, well, in the bubble, he just kind of sucked. He was bad. I mean, it was a large reason why the Pels went 2-6. I think he was 2 of 13 or 2 of 14 in that first game against the Utah Jazz. Could not put his shot together. And this is the first year he was really shooting well. And a lot of that credit goes to Fred Vinson. And who knows if he's coming back next year with the letting go of Alvin Gentry this offseason. And looking at Kyra Lewis's three-point percentage, it was hovering around 36%. Is that something that you see that can be improved as he you know, gains experience in the NBA?
Absolutely. That's arguably one of his biggest swing skills, as well as the three-point shooting. Because I'm going to be honest, pretty much everything else is there scoring-wise. And he'll have some room to grow. And, you know, he was the Helio, if you will, at Alabama this year. So he was taking a high volume of shots from all over the floor. And I honestly just think, I think with with Kyra, it's not really even him being this, you know, tremendous three-point shooter. I think if he's in league average from three-point line, he's going to be a positive in terms of what he's going to bring offensively, just with his playmaking, his creation abilities, you know, shot creation, creation for others, getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line. I'm not worried about that. It is something that he could look to improve, which would absolutely take his game to the next level. But a good mechanics, you know, good base to build upon. 80% free throw shooter or so this year at Alabama, and I like the volume. I think he shot about 5 threes per game at Alabama this year. So not something I'd be tremendously worried about when drafting him, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
He was 56 of 153 this year on three-point attempts. And then it's basically the same concern for Tyrese Maxey, shooting 29% from three as a freshman at Kentucky. And is it the same concern? Is it more of a concern with Maxey? Obviously, 7% is a pretty big drop, and he doesn't have 2 years of experience at the collegiate level. He just has the one.
Right. Definitely more of a concern with Maxey, although – at least for me, I project Maxey, I put out a video on it, to be eventually at some point in his career an above average 3-point shooter, which is kind of crazy, you know, considering he threw out the number 28%. That's what he did shoot this year at Kentucky. But, you know, watching his tape in terms of just long twos, which is what I look for in shooting translation, long twos, the volume that he took him at, free throw percentage, floaters, touch around the rim, everything is there for Tyrese Maxey. I think he's a few simple mechanic fixes away from eventually becoming, and I'm not saying right away, but eventually becoming at some point in his career an above average 3-point shooter for the NBA level. I'm talking around 40% maybe. His mechanics are pretty much beautiful for what, you know, he brought to the table, even though he did shoot 28%. But great lower body. The base is always there with him, whether it's off the dribble, off the catch. And I think he's one guy that I definitely feel even more confident in projecting to be a better 3-point shooter than Kyra by the end of both of their careers.
Now, we're talking about both of these guys possibly going at 13 for the Pelicans. Kyra is not a guy who I've seen mock that high very frequently. I know you said you're high on him. Tyrese Maxey is a guy who is typically mocked around the top 15 from what I've seen. Do you think the Pels get the value that they want should they draft either of these guys at that spot in this year's NBA draft?
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, both of these guys are in my top 10. I have Lewis at 7. I have Maxey at 10. So I feel more than confident, you know, more than confident to pull the trigger on each of these guys, either one of these guys at 13, if I was New Orleans. Again, that is, you know, talking if that is the need that they are hoping to fill, especially if Lonzo Ball is out of the picture. I think it becomes, you know, much more realistic of a need of a spot to fill. But we kind of mentioned it, 3-and-D wing, I would definitely say is still the priority. But if you strike out on some of those guys, or if, you know, the front office isn't as high on a Patrick Williams or an Okoro, or they go even earlier, which is entirely possible, I think a pretty good consolation would be to get to that backup point guard spot. I think, you know, either one of Lewis or Maxey is a really good value pick at 13, especially for what the Pelicans need.
Now, if the Pels decide to go with a Williams or with somebody else at that 13th spot, a 3-and-D player as opposed to a point guard, and we know Griffin's an aggressive GM, and he's not a GM. Trajan Langdon's the GM, but president of basketball operations. We know that the Pels are trying to change the culture in New Orleans and be aggressive right now. So should they package some of those picks and decide to move up, or maybe even send an older player or a lesser valued player on the roster to another team and move up to get a backup point guard out of this year's draft, maybe in the late first, maybe in the early second? What kind of names are you looking at? Two names that I've listed are Cassius Winston and Nico Mannion. And those are two names that I recognize. I know Cassius Winston's known as a good culture guy. Are there any other names that you're looking at? What are your thoughts on those two names?
Yeah, so the I think those are two great options, especially even if the Pelicans aren't to move from 39 or 42, if they're able to just stay put. I think there's a pretty good chance Winston would be there at any one of those picks. Mannion, probably not so much. He's kind of a late first round, early second round guy. Not someone I personally would trade up for. I'm just not as in on Mannion as others, but I think with Winston, you're getting a guy that is going to be, like you mentioned, great culture guy, great person off the court. He's going to be tremendous in the locker room, which is why I think he's going to be a really solid pro. But also, I think, a tremendous three-point shooter in a lesser role than he was at Michigan State. He's going to be able to play off ball a lot more than he did, which, you know, could maximize his value as a shooter even more, which is kind of scary to think about because he's one of the best off-dribble, off-catch shooters in college basketball last year. Obviously, the downsides with him is that he is a bit older. I think Malachi Flynn is a guy that you can throw in there. As you know, maybe you move up a few spots, maybe seven or so spots to try to get him. But also someone that could be there at 39. I think Malachi Flynn from San Diego State, definitely someone that I'd be looking into. But honestly, with the depth of this class, there's going to be guys like Peyton Pritchard and Jalen Harris from Nevada. You can even throw in Miles Powell and Marcus Howard that are going to probably be there into the late second round points. And so I think if I was the Pelicans, at least I'd probably stay put and see who falls there. I don't think anyone is truly worth, you know, trading up nine or so spots for and sacrificing future draft capital unless someone, you know, crazy falls off the board, which is I don't think could happen. I mean, another guy I'd like to see is Grant Riller. Could be there at 39, to be honest. I have him at 14 on my board. But, you know, one of the great shot creators, space creators in this class, probably one of the best I've seen in college basketball doing it while he was at College of Charleston. He'd be an absolute home run at either 39 or 42.
And are you feeling that the Pels should stick where they're at that 39 and 42 spot because of the depth of this class in terms of the point guard position?
I think so, yeah. And I believe there's going to be guys like you mentioned, Winston and others that will be available at those spots, as opposed to trading up for a guy like Mannion. I don't know if I'd sacrifice future draft capital to move up, you know, nine or so spots.
Fair enough. Now, as we look to that last third and final position that the Pels are looking for, possibly in this draft, possibly in free agency, it's that center position, because who knows if they're bringing back Derek Favors. He was fan base was not happy with him during the bubble. And Jackson Hayes is a guy that has a very high ceiling, but he's leaving a lot to be desired on the defensive end of the floor. Jahlil Okafor is a free agent this offseason, and I highly doubt the Pels bring him back. Now, at that 13th spot, is there anybody from that 4-5 position that you see to be worth it? I know you like Onyeka Okongwu, as I do, but there's no way he'll be around for that 13th spot. And I said on the pod on Monday that there's basically – I mean, I just don't see the value there for that 13th spot for the Pels, right, should they go to that center position.
Right. I would say no, because I think Okongwu is going to go, as he should, probably top five even. Another guy, you know, in James Wiseman, that's often talked about. If you were to pull guys on Twitter talking about the draft, he might be there at 13, honestly. he's probably going to be gone in the top 10, especially in this year's draft. So I really could see no value in drafting, you know, even reaching for someone like my next best center on the board, Xavier Tillman from Michigan State. Although I love the pick of Tillman. I have him at 18. Especially for the Pelicans, just talking about, you know, need fit, I wouldn't reach at the 13th pick for a guy like that.
As we talk about that five position, you know, you could look for a four kind of guy to play maybe a small ball five, maybe just be a spacer for Zion should the Pels decide to play small ball. And I've seen two different mocks where Pokusevski from Serbia goes to the Pels at 13, and I've seen him go to the Pels at 39. What do you think about him?
That's my guy, Elliot. That's one of my favorite guys in this entire draft. I have him at 4 overall. And you're talking about someone who I think you're kind of spoiling my pick here, because I would say that's who I'd pick if I was the Pelicans at 13, if he's there, absolutely, because I think there's a very real chance that he could be. This is a guy with, I would say, the second greatest upside in this class, maybe even the first, you know, it depends on how high you value LaMelo Ball. But not only that, everyone makes him out to kind of be this extreme, you know, boomer bust candidate. You're talking about a guy who's 6'11", potentially has, there's rumors that he's grown to 7'1", 7'2", that he said it himself. And he's listed as a wing, listed as a shooting guard. Tremendous movement. He literally has the movement that, like, Kristaps Porzingis, you know, wants to have in terms of a 7'1 guy, 7 foot guy on the perimeter. He's a tremendous moving shooter, probably one of the best shooting packages in this entire class. has so much room to grow, obviously is extremely young. He's only played 4 professional games at the age of 18. I mean, I would be, if I was a Pelicans fan, he was there at 13, I'd be screaming for him, because I think that's someone, when you're talking about this draft, especially for the Pelicans, if you add him to a trio of Ingram and Williamson and he does pan out, I mean, that's it could be really scary.
So who's the comp for Poke? I can never pronounce that dude's last name right. Pokusevski. Is it Chris Stapps? Is it a guy like Nikola Jokic? What are you looking at there for? I know everybody either loves or hates comps. I don't know how you feel about them, but if there is a comp for Pokusevski, who are you looking at?
I'm kind of in the middle on comps, but honestly, like, I'm not just saying this. There's no comparison for how this guy plays. Like, I've tried. It's not to say Porzingis, because he doesn't have the, you know, the upper body strength of Porzingis, but also Porzingis doesn't have his movement. I mean, again, it's just you don't see guys 6'11", whatever he is. We're going to find out pretty soon, and that could alter his draft position, honestly. 6'11", 7-foot shooting guard, small forward, you just do not see that. Someone with his ball handling, someone with his playmaking, yeah, it's insane to me, because I think he's a guy that is absolutely not going to play the 5 at the NBA level. He doesn't have near the amount of strength needed, but is someone that can play a 4 role, can play a 3 role, and can be kind of that secondary rim protector on the floor as well, just with his length and his shot blocking ability. So to be quite honest with you, I don't have a comp for Pokusevski. It's something I've tried. I've surely tried on over the draft process, but I mean, he's kind of just one of his own in terms of just the blend of size, movement, and you know, upside that he has.
For the Pelicans at 13, you mentioned Pokusevski from Serbia being a guy that would be great for them to take at 13. Now, obviously, the Pels, they're probably not going to get Onyeka Okongwu. They're probably not going to get LaMelo Ball. They're probably not going to get Anthony Edwards. But as far as feasible picks at 13, could you give us a list of 3 to 5 guys where it's like, okay, they won that pick. That's a great pick at 13.
Okay, yeah, so absolutely. I would say 1 far and away is Pokusevski. I might be a little bit biased, but if he was to fall at 13, I'd say that's a home run. I think guys we've already mentioned, Kira Lewis, Patrick Williams, Devin Vassell, and I'd probably add Isaac Okoro to that list in terms of 5 guys that are absolute winners if they fall to 13. I think you have no regret about pulling the trigger on any one of those 5.
I like it. I like those names. I like those names a lot. Again, I haven't seen a lot of Pokusevski, but after you're hyping him up, I'm definitely going to go to YouTube and watch as much as I can. Maybe he'll be my guy as well. So as we look forward to the second round, that 39, 42, 60 slots, assuming the Pels stick around there, are there any sleepers, guys who can contribute, be a draft and stash guy like Didi Luzada this last year? What are names that we should be watching out for that we might not know come that second round that you think would be good fits for the Pelicans?
This is a guy that I'll start off with, Zeke Nnaji from Arizona. This is a guy that's risen up draft boards, I'd say pretty substantially since the season ended. But obviously freshman big, had a really nice productive season at Arizona. Could very well be a first round pick, but if he was to somehow fall to 39, I think that could potentially solve the backup center problem for the Pelicans. I think he'd be tremendous value at that spot. In terms of draft and stash, Georgios Kalatzakis is a guy who's now 21 years old. He's immediately draft eligible, so he wouldn't so far as be a stash guy. He'd be someone that could potentially come over and play right away. But a 6'7", 2 guard that's not being talked about enough with his ball handling ability, and the biggest swing skill for him is really his shooting. He's played professionally for Greece and you know, for his club team at a high level over the last 3 years. I think he more than enough warrants a spot at 39 or 42 to be drafted, or even 60 if he's there. I would say either 2 of those guys would be really good, like, sleeper options for the Pelicans at 39 or 42.
One more need the Pelicans have that we've talked a little bit about, especially at the top when we were talking about Patrick Williams, was the need for just anybody, literally anybody who can help on Team D that's fast enough to guard 3s, big enough to guard 4s, and whose name is not Kenrich Williams. Is there anybody in this class that you think that can step up and be that for them? Should they not go Patrick Williams? Should they not go somebody else at 13? Should they move up? what have you, anybody that you think the Pels can feasibly grab probably in that second round for a guy that can step into the roster and help out right away?
I wouldn't say so in terms of the level that Williams or Vassell could potentially bring, obviously. But at 39 or 42, another one of my guys in this draft is Nate Hinton from Houston, just kind of all over the place, 3-and-D guy, really solid frame. He's averaging almost 10 rebounds per game as a 6'5 guard. And he's someone that is, you know, just an ultimate winner, really, when you look at him. Tremendous team defender, can knock down the open three. And he's, I think, really on track to becoming a prototypical 3-and-D guy if he's able to pan out. I think that would be great value in terms of guys, you know, that have upside to play that 3-and-D role that the Pelicans need to fill in terms of the, you know, second round.
There you have it, Pels fans. There's tons of names that we can check out and film to watch going forward towards the NBA draft in October as the Pelican season has already come to a close and we have some hope, some things to look forward to other than the coaching carousel, possible free agency, and the like. Now, Ethan, being in the position that you're in as an NBA draft evaluator, who's your favorite guy out of this year's draft? We've heard a lot about Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman, Onyeka, and then there's kind of somewhat of a drop-off. Who's your favorite guy coming out of this year's draft where you think he's going to be a superstar?
I mean, I kind of talked about Pokuševski, but I would say it's either him or definitely LaMelo Ball, who I have at one, and he's kind of in his own tier, obviously, now for me. Probably the highest upside in this draft, just going to be a tremendous NBA player. He's going to immediately slot into any NBA team, any lineup, and run an offense successfully, I feel like. I mean, he's got outlier passing ability, outlier vision. My favorite thing about LaMelo, and this is some least favorite thing about him, is his interview with Mike Schmitz, if you've watched that, the film breakdown that they did. And Mike Schmitz obviously is tremendous at what he does, but he's trying to get out, you know, he's trying to get out these basketball terms from LaMelo. Like, why did you do this? Why did you do this? And everything LaMelo answers is just instincts, instincts, instincts. And it's crazy to me that if he's able to, you know, now assimilate himself into an NBA lineup, an NBA, you know, franchise, and kind of, you know, develop even more as a passer. This is a guy that's making, you know, three-quarter football passes, three-quarter baseball passes, you know, and not breaking a sweat doing it. I mean, he's got tremendous vision. And not to mention, he's also 6'7". There's questions about his maturity, but I can speak from experience, even playing against him a few years ago in AAU ball. He's a guy that's matured so much over the last 2 years, just in terms of how he carries himself and how he presents himself. I think he's 100% NBA ready and should be the first overall pick, you know, fit thrown out the window.
Before I throw out my next question, you played against LaMelo Ball in AAU basketball?
I did, yeah. You know, being in the SoCal circuit, there's a lot of guys. I think I mentioned on one of my old shows that Okongwu once gave me a concussion even. I just rammed straight into me. So, this is kind of the first class where, like, I was watching college basketball this year, and I was like, man, I think it was the USC-UCLA game I was watching. I was like, there's probably 8 to 7 kids that I've played either in high school basketball or in some AAU setting on the floor right now, which is pretty cool to look at, honestly.
That's wild. Did you plan on playing college basketball at all?
I did, yeah, I did. I didn't have a good enough senior year to land any D1 offers, but I had my fair share of D2s and D3s. I chose to go with my major in sports journalism at Arizona State. So I ultimately didn't think it was worth it to play at a spot where, you know, I wasn't going to have the full college experience, I guess.
Fair enough. Damn, I wasn't expecting that. We got a gem, hidden gem in today's podcast. So you're saying that you believe Melo to be the top overall pick. He should be the top overall pick to the Timberwolves. Do you think that's something that the T-Wolves should do? Do you think they should move off the pick and try to trade it? Do you think the Knicks will, you know, be the Knicks and give up their entire roster to go get LaMelo Ball? What do you see happening there?
Right. I think the Wolves, well, at least from what I've heard so far, is that they're leaning towards Anthony Edwards, and it's still really, really early. So there's no solidified information out yet. But I think if you're talking about just the best player available, best player in this draft, I think adding LaMelo at one would definitely be what I would do. But again, I think it's very possible. Probably the best fit in this draft, honestly, is the Knicks for LaMelo, just because he's going to fit right into that roster right away. And he's going to be, you know, he's going to be their guy, honestly. From day one, he has potential to be their guy. I think that's the best fit for him. Obviously, he's not going to fall to number eight, but I could definitely see either one of the Knicks or the Pistons putting together packages to move up to specifically two for the Warriors. I think it would make a lot of sense for the Warriors to trade down from two, accumulate some, you know, future draft capital, and probably get one of the, you know, similar guys, whether it's Denny Avdia or a Patrick Williams or Devin Vassell, that they're looking at two, at, you know, eight or seven or wherever it may be.
There you have it, Pels fans. Ethan Piotta of Prospect Pod and Overtime Heroics. Ethan, how can we follow you on Twitter? How can we check out your podcast?
Right, so you can follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotta, and then you can follow my podcast on Twitter as well at Prospect Pod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, pretty much everywhere. So check us out. We have 10 episodes so far. We're going to be hopefully dropping another one this weekend, which is kind of going to go over some of the mock draft, you know, fit intel-based guys in the lottery. One of these teams we just covered, which is the New Orleans Pelicans, which I'm certainly excited to see what they do end up doing at 13, because I think this is a roster and potentially, you know, big-time offseason ahead. But if they, you know, they hit in free agency, they hit in the coaching carousel, and they hit on a draft pick, they're going to be, you know, a potential playoff team in the West next year.
We'll definitely be sure to share that podcast and let you know how you can check out the rest of Ethan's show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, what have you. Ethan, we're definitely going to have you back on. I know you're going to be a busy guy come draft time, but should the Pels move up or make any crazy changes, we'll definitely be in contact with you. Hopefully we can get you on again either before the draft or after draft to help us learn about who the Pels take in this year's coming NBA draft in October. Ethan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on. Looking forward to it.
And there you have it, Pels fans. Awesome conversation with Ethan Piotta today of Prospect Pod and of Overtime Heroics. The young man just kills it. He does great on that podcast. Make sure you go check that out. Make sure you follow him on Twitter to get some constant evaluations of guys that are coming out of the NBA draft. Pels fans, make sure you go follow at Elliot Clough on Twitter. You're going to be getting a ton of Pelicans content right over there. And should you have any questions or concerns about the podcast, you can always respond to any of my tweets that pertain to the Pelicans. And while you're here, make sure you subscribe, leave a rate and review.
Do it!
On Apple Podcasts. That really, really, really helps us out. I know I say that every podcast, but it really, really does, and we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Make sure to go follow Believe on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can check out a plethora of their other podcasts on Believe.com, or just head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. You can check out a bunch of Pelicans coverage on SB Nation's The Bird Rights. That will include work from former guests like Preston Ellis, Ali Cosell, Chris Connor, Kevin Berrios, and David Grubb. Don't forget, go follow at Elliot Clough on Twitter and make sure to check out the Apple Podcasts rate and review option on that platform. Pels fans, once again, I am Elliot Clough, and this was Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.